ინგლისური ენის ტესტის მოსმენის დავალება, მესამე ვარიანტი. ინგლისური ენის ტესტის მოსმენის დავალება, მესამე ვარიანტი. იმ შემთხვევაში, თუ ჩანაწერი ცუდად ისმის, გთხოვთ ახლავე აცნობოთ მეთვალყურეს. თქვენ მონიტორზე დაინახავთ მოსმენის დავალების შეკითხვებს. გთხოვთ მოუსმინოთ აუდიო ჩანაწერს და ისე შეასრულოთ დავალება.
Task 1. You are going to listen to 5 texts. For each of them, answer the 2 questions given. Mark the correct answer A, B, or C. You have 20 seconds to look through the task. You will hear the recording twice.
Text 1. David and I became friends when we were kids. We went to different schools, but David and his family lived in the house next to us. I don't exactly remember what made us so close. We were so different. I loved outdoor games, he loved indoor games. I enjoyed reading books, he spent a lot of time in front of his computer. In high school, my dad once took me fishing, and since then it has become an important part of my lifestyle. At that same time, David started making models of airplanes. He never showed any interest in my hobby, but we liked to share our impressions and would spend evenings together. Unfortunately, David and his family moved to another town some time ago. However, we are Facebook friends and we're still in close contact with each other. David and I became friends when we were kids. We went to different schools, but David and his family lived in the house next to us. I don't exactly remember what made us so close. We were so different. I loved outdoor games, he loved indoor games. I enjoyed reading books, he spent a lot of time in front of his computer. In high school, my dad once took me fishing, and since then it has become an important part of my lifestyle. At that same time, David started making models of airplanes. He never showed any interest in my hobby, but we liked to share our impressions and would spend evenings together. Unfortunately, David and his family moved to another town some time ago. However, we are Facebook friends and we're still in close contact with each other. Text 2.
What's the highest mountain range in Europe? The Alps? Wrong. It is the Caucasus Mountains, marking the border between Georgia and Russia. While the highest peak, Elbrus, is in Russia, Georgia is proud to have the second highest mountain peak, Shkhara, which is 5,193 meters high, nearly 400 meters higher than Mont Blanc, the peak on the border of France and Italy. These majestic mountains, with their terrifying narrow and winding roads, and hidden villages, which you cannot reach in winter, are the source of many legends. According to one Greek legend, the Caucasus Mountains were one of the columns holding up the world. And another legend says that it was here that Zeus, the Greek god, ordered to tie up Prometheus with unbreakable chains. Prometheus was tortured day and night by a giant eagle. Today, the Caucasus Mountains are increasingly becoming a destination for climbers, hikers, or skiers looking for adventure. What's the highest mountain range in Europe? The Alps? Wrong. It is the Caucasus Mountains, marking the border between Georgia and Russia. While the highest peak, Elbrus, is in Russia, Georgia is proud to have the second highest mountain peak, Shkhara, which is 5,193 meters high, nearly 400 meters higher than Mont Blanc, the peak on the border of France and Italy. These majestic mountains, with their terrifying narrow and winding roads and hidden villages, which you cannot reach in winter, are the source of many legends. According to one Greek legend, the Caucasus Mountains were one of the columns holding up the world. And another legend says that it was here that Zeus, the Greek god, ordered to tie up Prometheus with unbreakable chains. Prometheus was tortured day and night by a giant eagle. Today, the Caucasus Mountains are increasingly becoming a destination for climbers, hikers, or skiers looking for adventure.
Text 3. The Harbin International Ice and Snow Sculpture Festival is an annual winter festival that takes place in Harbin, China. It is the largest ice and snow festival in the world. Today, it has become an international festival and competition. At first, participants of the festival were Chinese, but then other artists from Japan and Malaysia joined in. The festival demonstrates the world's biggest ice sculptures, which are displayed throughout the city. The festival starts on January 5th and lasts 1 month. However, if the weather stays cold, the figures made of ice often open earlier and last longer. During the festival, there are night tours in many parts of the city that are lit with ice lanterns. Winter activities during the festival include alpine skiing, winter swimming in the river, and the ice lantern exhibition in the city garden. The Harbin International Ice and Snow Sculpture Festival is an annual winter festival that takes place in Harbin, China. It is the largest ice and snow festival in the world. Today, it has become an international festival and competition. At first, participants of the festival were Chinese, but then other artists from Japan and Malaysia joined in. The festival demonstrates the world's biggest ice sculptures, which are displayed throughout the city. The festival starts on January 5th and lasts 1 month. However, if the weather stays cold, the figures made of ice often open earlier and last longer. During the festival, there are night tours in many parts of the city that are lit with ice lanterns. Winter activities during the festival include alpine skiing, winter swimming in the river, and the ice lantern exhibition in the city garden. Text 4.
A 25-year-old Roman general and statesman, Julius Caesar, was sailing the Aegean Sea when he was kidnapped by Sicilian pirates. While staying with the pirates, Julius Caesar spent most of his time composing poetry. He would then read his writings to the pirates. Julius Caesar demanded from the pirates not to talk while he was sleeping or resting. The pirates started to respect him and allowed him to move freely around their island. The pirates who kidnapped Caesar asked for silver money to let him free. Caesar sent his men to his homeland to collect the silver for him. While his men were collecting the required silver, Julius Caesar was alone with the pirates, but instead of feeling fear, he treated them as if they were his servants. Caesar acted as a leader rather than a prisoner. However, Caesar promised to punish them after he was freed. As soon as Caesar was free again, he kept his promise and killed all the pirates and returned all of his silver. A 25-year-old Roman general and statesman, Julius Caesar, was sailing the Aegean Sea when he was kidnapped by Sicilian pirates. While staying with the pirates, Julius Caesar spent most of his time composing poetry. He would then read his writings to the pirates. Julius Caesar demanded from the pirates not to talk while he was sleeping or resting. The pirates started to respect him and allowed him to move freely around their island. The pirates who kidnapped Caesar asked for silver money to let him free. Caesar sent his men to his homeland to collect the silver for him. While his men were collecting the required silver, Julius Caesar was alone with the pirates, but instead of feeling fear, he treated them as if they were his servants. Caesar acted as a leader rather than a prisoner. However, Caesar promised to punish them after he was freed. As soon as Caesar was free again, he kept his promise and killed all the pirates and returned all of his silver.
Text 5. Georgia remembers a lot of historical battles which make Georgians proud today. One of them was the Battle of Dede Gory between the Kingdom of Georgia and the Seljuk Empire at the beginning of the 12th century. Georgia's victory at Dudgory marked the beginning of the medieval Georgian Golden Age and is known as a miraculous victory. On the morning of 12th August 1121, 200 Georgian soldiers left the camp and rode to the enemy's side. They pretended that they wanted to run away from the Georgian camp. The Seljuk commanders welcomed the Georgian soldiers. As soon as the Georgians entered the enemy's camp, they attacked and killed most of the enemies. The Seljuk's army became disorganized and the Georgians won the battle. Nowadays, Georgians continue to remember the battle of August 12th of 1121 and celebrate the annual September festival known as Dudgoroba. The preparations for the festival start as early as in May. The Battle of Dudgory is one of the most notable battles of Georgian history. Georgia remembers a lot of historical battles which make Georgians proud today. One of them was the Battle of Dudgory between the Kingdom of Georgia and the Seljuk Empire at the beginning of the 12th century. Georgia's victory at Dudgory marked the beginning of the medieval Georgian Golden Age and is known as a miraculous victory. On the morning of 12th August 1121, 200 Georgian soldiers left the camp and rode to the enemy's side. They pretended that they wanted to run away from the Georgian camp. The Seljuk commanders welcomed the Georgian soldiers. As soon as the Georgians entered the enemy's camp, they attacked and killed most of the enemies. The Seljuk's army became disorganized and the Georgians won the battle. Nowadays, Georgians continue to remember the Battle of August 12th of 1121 and celebrate the annual September festival known as Dudgoroba. The preparations for the festival start as early as in May. The Battle of Dudgory is one of the most notable battles of Georgian history.
Task 2. You are going to listen to one text with 8 questions. Mark the correct answer A, B, or C. You now have 30 seconds to look through the task. You will then hear the recording twice.
Hello, my name is Manolo Blahnik and I am a Spanish shoe designer. I am the eldest of the 2 children of a wealthy family. The Canary Islands is my birthplace. So, I go there whenever I get a chance, which usually means several times every year. I have some friends who are still there and, of course, my mother who is the most important person in my life. So, I try to see her as often as I can. She still lives in the same house where I lived when I was a child. My best memories are connected with my childhood. I grew up on the banana plantation that has belonged to my family for generations. I had a wonderful childhood on the small and quiet island. We had no TV, but I loved the cinema, so I would go as often as possible. My sister Evangelina and I had lots of toys. But what I really loved best was running around the banana trees together with her. We were always together playing and having fun. And now we enjoy our professional life together almost as much. She works with me now. It's true that my parents didn't want me to be a shoe designer. They saw my future life in a different light. They wanted me to study law, so they sent me to the university in Geneva. But I left the university before I got my diploma. In my university years, I dreamt about working in the theater and making designs for films and theatrical performances. So, I went to live in Paris to study art and stage set design. Then I moved to London and then New York. By the way, it was not until 2019 that we opened our boutique in Paris. But one day when I showed some of my set designs to Diana Vreeland, the editor of the magazine Vogue, she told me that what I really should do was to start designing shoes. It is not very often that you get to meet your heroes, let alone receive advice on your work and career. I went back to England and began to learn how to make shoes. I've never taken official classes on shoemaking. Actually, I studied it informally. I would travel to Italy and visit the best shoe factories there, giving questions to the shoemakers about how they made shoes. Within a year, I was making shoes for a famous English fashion designer, Ossie Clark's fashion shows. About 1 year later, I opened my first boutique shop. So, today I still have the same boutique. A lot of women wear my shoes. Of course, I never tell anyone who my clients are because I like to respect people's privacy. In 2003, I had the first exhibition of my works at the Design Museum in London. If I am not mistaken, I'm the only shoe designer ever to have had an entire exhibition like that dedicated to my work. There will be soon another exhibition of my work at the Bata Shoe Museum in Toronto, Canada. At my house, I have an example of almost every pair of shoes I've ever made. It's like a shoe museum. Each shoe brings back so many memories for me, they are like my children. It is always a delight to be able to show so much of your work in one place. Through my works, I try to show the different influences and inspirations I have had throughout my career. I feel happy when people say positive things about me. However, I am not happy when I hear critical comments, but I understand their importance. They push me to work even harder. Hello, my name is Manolo Blahnik and I am a Spanish shoe designer. I am the eldest of the two children of a wealthy family. The Canary Islands is my birthplace. So, I go there whenever I get a chance, which usually means several times every year. I have some friends who are still there and, of course, my mother, who is the most important person in my life. So, I try to see her as often as I can. She still lives in the same house where I lived when I was a child. My best memories are connected with my childhood. I grew up on the banana plantation that has belonged to my family for generations. I had a wonderful childhood on the small and quiet island. We had no TV, but I loved the cinema, so I would go as often as possible. My sister Evangelina and I had lots of toys. But what I really loved best was running around the banana trees together with her. We were always together playing and having fun. And now we enjoy our professional life together almost as much. She works with me now. It's true that my parents didn't want me to be a shoe designer. They saw my future life in a different light. They wanted me to study law, so they sent me to the university in Geneva. But I left the university before I got my diploma. In my university years, I dreamt about working in the theater and making designs for films and theatrical performances. So, I went to live in Paris to study art and stage set design. Then I moved to London and then New York. By the way, it was not until 2019 that we opened our boutique in Paris. But one day when I showed some of my set designs to Diana Vreeland, the editor of the magazine Vogue, she told me that what I really should do was to start designing shoes. It is not very often that you get to meet your heroes, let alone receive advice on your work and career. I went back to England and began to learn how to make shoes. I've never taken official classes on shoemaking. Actually, I studied it informally. I would travel to Italy and visit the best shoe factories there, giving questions to the shoemakers about how they made shoes. Within a year, I was making shoes for a famous English fashion designer, Ossie Clark's fashion shows. About 1 year later, I opened my first boutique shop. So, today I still have the same boutique. A lot of women wear my shoes. Of course, I never tell anyone who my clients are because I like to respect people's privacy. In 2003, I had the first exhibition of my works at the Design Museum in London. If I am not mistaken, I'm the only shoe designer ever to have had an entire exhibition like that dedicated to my work. there will be soon another exhibition of my work at the Bada Shoe Museum in Toronto, Canada. At my house, I have an example of almost every pair of shoes I've ever made. It's like a shoe museum. Each shoe brings back so many memories for me, they are like my children. It is always a delight to be able to show so much of your work in one place. Through my works, I try to show the different influences and inspirations I have had throughout my career. I feel happy when people say positive things about me. However, I am not happy when I hear critical comments, but I understand their importance. They push me to work even harder.
This is the end of the listening task.
Მოსმენის დავალება დასრულებულია.